Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Next message. Save Saturday at 9:24 p.m.
Sorry, I'm just, it's starting to hit me like a, 2-ton heavy thing.
Imperium is the Latin word from which we get the word empire. It means power or authority, and the federal government of these United States is acting like a hegemonic empire while retaining the appearance and official structure of a constitutional democratic republic, a legally limited government to deal with certain public things, which is Latin, in Latin is res publica, where we get the word republic. Supposed to be populated by elected temporary officials and held to account by the sovereign citizens. But this de facto empire, like all empires, will end, and it appears we are close to that end. The only question is, will we turn back toward the free republic, or collapse and be subsumed into a regional or global empire in which we the people are no longer sovereign? Conservatives, which are two-thirds libertarian, as in classical liberal, seek to restore the republic. However, we have some major obstacles to overcome, chiefly the state dominance of medicine, insurance, and the economy on behalf of a few private corporate interests known as Obamacare, and an insurmountable debt fabricated out of nothing by their private bank, the so-called Federal Reserve. The battle between liberty and tyranny is ever present and always messy, and liberty is rarely the victor. In our duopoly-dominated national politics, we have one wing given over to absolutism and statism, and the other populated by spineless squishes who prefer to be the controlled opposition rather than engage in the heroic battle for the advancement of liberty. Yet, there are champions of liberty in the latter wing, fighting behind enemy lines in their own party to defend liberty and restore the republic. The real conservatives and the real libertarians in the Republican Party are the minority, yet they represent the majority of the people of these United States. They are courageous, but unfortunately powerless, unless we the people stand with them. To defeat the statists in the Democratic Party, first you must defeat the rhinos in the GOP. Your naked emperor seems to know nothing about anything, and his lackeys display a total disdain for congressional inquiries into their apparent failures. Makes you wonder if the chief executive knows nothing about the NSA spying on all Americans, the IRS targeting people for their religion or ideology, the failure to protect Americans in the Foreign Service, illegal gun running to Mexico, and the failure to launch of a signature health care legislation, then why is he the chief executive? Could it be that he is the transnational banker's meat puppet? As he employs executive orders bypassing Congress to control the weather, he borrows unprecedented amounts of money, putting you and your posterity in hock, and furthers an agenda that controls your medical care, insurance, gun ownership, while providing amnesty to millions of illegal trespassers, gets caught spying on our allies, and supports our enemies with a grossly imperial foreign policy. What does your Congress do about it? Speeches, and attack the real statesmen who earnestly try to stop this imperial agenda. This republic come empire cannot be destroyed by direct attack. We can only die by suicide, and we put the gun in our own mouth. The real problem is not would-be Imperator Obama, or even the socialists masquerading as Democrats. The real problem is the corporatists posing as Republicans. These squishes, these rhinos are the real problem. Jerks like McCain, McConnell, Boehner, and King are the real enemy, because they pander to conservatives and constitutionalists while furthering the imperial statist agenda. Liars like Karl Rove are impeding conservative and libertarian candidates while promoting rhinos. This week we have a very conservative slate of candidates up for election in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and yet the Republicans are being outspent 20-1 by the Democrats. Why is national money being poured into a state race, and why is the GOP not countering it? If you want constitutionally limited government restored, if you truly believe in liberty and sovereignty, then you must purge the surrendering, lying, cheating, squishy rhinos from the GOP. We need more conservative and libertarian grassroots working together, and we need a force multiplier. Wake up the sheep before it's too late. You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservative and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the statists push their imperial agenda into our oblivion, because our empire is overextended militarily and economically, and it is coming to an end. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. Crush the rhinos. You are live with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City.
And Trog's got club from the West Coast. You want me to roll on that dialogue you just gave?
Roll away.
Man, I'll tell you what. That was well done. I'm proud to know you. You're a true patriot. I'm serious. I just, you know, there are days you and I talk all the time or chat all the time and, you know, about everything that's going on and trying to make sense of it and trying to keep a straight line through the middle of it, you know, to not get caught up in whatever the news of the day is, but actually focus on real issues. And, you know, sometimes it gets kind of heavy because the biggest thing that I see, and of course what we will talk about tonight, you know, is bits and pieces of several things, but what's the common thread? The common thread is a population that is just standing by watching this happen. I mean, I don't see anybody in the news talking about the real issues. I see them talking about the issues, but they don't get in depth in what's really going on behind the scenes or, you know, like we just had, we were just talking about that Benghazi, you know, thing that CNN did. You know, it just went poof and just died. Well, why did it die? Because they don't want to talk about it and they don't want to do anything about it. And, you know, they just want to keep running their fake hearings and, you know, this side against that side and their kabuki theater. And that's just, you know, one issue. You know, it's like the I almost couldn't stomach the Obamacare hearings because I'm just going, none of you are talking about the real issue. You're talking about the website and you're talking about people's rates going up. And I mean, I'm like, yeah, we all knew this. We knew this 4 years ago. Some of us did anyway, and we knew this was going to crush the system. The question is what the hell are they going to do about it? And what are people going to do about it besides whine and moan and piss and complain? That's, you know, always seems to come down to once a week when we, you know, navigate towards this point right now that you and I are doing is what are you going to do about it? You're going to post shit on Facebook. Oh, there goes first cuss word. You're going to post stuff on Facebook or, you know, run around and be a free newspaper delivery person. I actually used to get paid to deliver newspapers when I was a kid. Now everybody does it for free. You know, run around and post the news of the day, or are you going to focus and find out who's fighting the good fight, who's speaking the truth, who do you need to back? You know, this is all rolling into 2013. I mean, I have no idea what they're going to do about Obamacare. I really don't, because I don't hear anybody talking about solutions. All I do is, you know, I'm just watching this kabuki theater go on and count, looking at my our national debt and looking at, you know, trying to start a war in Iran and Syria and, you know, and how many people did we, you know, drone this week, and 1,000 people died in Iraq last year after we spent a billions of dollars and thousands of lives and families destroyed, you know, in America, you know, to go invade this country, you know, 1,000 people in a month. You know, there's 4 or 5 bombings a day. So here we sat getting ready to cover the issues, and some of it is the news of the day, and hopefully we will, you know, be able to circumnavigate the fluff and get to some real issues. You know, I mean, I know we can. I'm just saying hopefully we'll be able to do that for people that are listening. And, yeah, this is real. You know, we've been waiting for this for 4 years. Well, it's here. It's here. It's now. And it's terrible. And the president, obviously, I heard Bill Maher say the president lied. Oh, my gosh, man, this guy is a total leftist.
I saw that.
You know?
Yeah.
And people are getting it. And what's amazing to me is I hear all these people freaking out. Oh, my God, my insurance went up, and the president lied, and this and that and the other, and all the leftists, you know, coming out. And somebody chewed up Debbie Wasserman Schultz the other day. Was it yesterday or today? I can't remember. You know, and here we are, you know, and they're, like, all surprised. And I are you surprised at any of this? I mean, some of the details, obviously. You know, I mean,
details are always
revealed. You know, there's some things coming out being exposed I didn't foresee, but the basic disaster of it, I don't think anybody on our side is surprised at all. You know,
go ahead. What if it's not a disaster? What if this is exactly how it's supposed to work?
What if it is designed precisely to be difficult to actually get into these exchanges, and the only people who get into the exchanges end up just expanding Medicaid instead of buying these insurance products? In the meantime, you're crowding out the private market with all these national mandates and limiting the insurance market so that maybe the whole thing will just implode, and then you get the single-payer system that they've been dreaming about since World War II. Maybe this is exactly how it's supposed to work. It's almost, Chris, I think I screwed up, played the wrong clip to start the show, but yeah. I like the Queensryche song, and we are talking about Empire, so maybe I can recover now just for a little fun, and then we'll come back on the other side. But it was Halloween this past week, and maybe this is a Halloween nightmare. Maybe Mike Myers is behind this whole thing, and it's working out exactly as it's supposed to be. Maybe this was a homicidal legislation from the get-go, and I think people need to think about that. Now, look, folks, you're live with Rex and Trog, and this is radioactive radio, so anything can happen. But all we can do is try to put the pieces together and bring you the information about conservative and libertarian grassroots within the GOP. But it's up to you to get the word out there. So, you're our only advertising arm. We have no budget. This costs us money. And so we appreciate everybody who has been posting and sharing the show and telling people about it and putting it all over the Internet. And if you want to help us out, go to the Tex and Rex show page on Facebook, and we have all the shows posted there. And if you click on the picture of the show that's promoting it, and this week's picture is a picture of the imperial president basically denying that he knows anything about anything. If you click on that, you will get in the comment section all the clips and articles that we actually used to put the show together for your reference. Just hit the share button and send that out there. If you see us on Twitter, just please retweet the show. We really, really appreciate it. It is the only way this information gets out there. And if you're listening live now or in archive, just remember, on Blog Talk Radio, you can always go to the Tex and Rex show page on Blog Talk Radio and scroll down. Every single episode we have is there for you to click on, listen in your browser or mobile device. And if you go below the show graphics, there is a download this episode hyperlink. Just right-click on that, and you get an MP3, which you can listen to your MP3-enabled device. Or you can burn a CD, email it to somebody. If you burn CDs, you can take it to your Republican Party meetings, Campaign for Liberty, Tea Party meetings, NA, Alcoholics Anonymous, Sexaholics, whatever meetings you go to, just hand it out to people. Get everybody involved, because this country is falling apart. This republic that's acting like an empire is coming off its heels, and this is your last chance to save it. And believe it or not, it ain't up to the politicians. It ain't up to the media pundits. It ain't up to the wealthy. It's up to you. So here's a little Halloween mashup about how bad this thing is, because sometimes you got to laugh, because, I mean, as Chris said, this is a disaster, but maybe this was an intended disaster.
He was working on his laptop late one night when his eyes beheld a ghoulish sight. He could not log in despite several tries, and then suddenly, to no one's surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the healthcare mash.
The healthcare mash.
It was a keyboard smash.
He did the mash.
The website would crash.
He did the mash.
And he did the healthcare mash. Who should design such a site? So flawed and so sloppy. The code is so ancient. Perhaps it was Hammurabi. He tried to apply, but the site would suspend. I've seen a eunuch with a more functional front end. Designers create a site with such awful coding.
They did the mash.
Oh, they did the healthcare mash.
The healthcare mash.
It was a keyboard smash.
They did the mash.
They took all of our cash.
They did the mash.
And did the healthcare mash. You know, 3 years really isn't that long to build a website, especially one that has to do
insurance plan, you will keep it. No one will be able to take that away from you. It hasn't happened yet. It won't happen in the future.
But it is happening. The president's health care law raises the standards for insurance policies, which many consider to be a good thing. But hundreds of thousands of Americans whose policies don't meet the new standards are being told that their health plans are being canceled.
Their health plans are being canceled. And that was far-right Tea Party Extreme Television Network, CBS. That's what's happening out there. And you know, there's all this focus about this website, Chris. And, I mean, yes, it's a $683 million mess. But that's not really the problem. Yeah, but that's not really the problem. I mean, all this focus about the website is just a distraction. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. They look like idiots. They pissed away a shitload of your money. There's cuss word number two. And but you went first. But they it's worse than that, because it's not just about putting together a crappy, you know, website that a 15-year-old kid could have done with a laptop or even from their smartphone for a shitload less money than they spent. But it's
so much,
it's
for no bid, right?
Thing, yeah, and it's, you know, Michelle Obama's roommate's vice president of you know, CGI. It's a corrupt mess. But that's besides the point. It's an ancillary issue, and it's so distracting because it's all that people are talking about, which is why the corporatist media is just a front for the duopoly. They shill for the Republicans and the Democrats. They keep, as you said, this kabuki theater going, and you get distracted by the fact that this friggin' website doesn't work. And even the Democrats are going, well, you know, Obamacare is more than a website. Yeah, no shit. It's way more than a website. It is the takeover of the largest and possibly the most important. I mean, oil is important, and there's a lot of important aspects of our economy, but what, when it comes down to it, what's important to a human being beyond their, you know, spiritual and philosophical outlook is their health. Because without that, you're in pretty bad shape. I mean, you know, it's precarious when you're born. It's precarious as you're growing and developing. And then you get a little bit, you know, you lose your mind and you have the capabilities of a full human being, but your frontal lobe hasn't fully developed. So in your early 20s, you're an idiot that's likely to injure themselves. And then you get older and things start to fall apart. So it's a kind of an important thing all the way across your whole life. They're taking over it. What they're doing is they're crowding out the private insurance market. They are using this hyper-control law to give all sorts of exemptions and privileges to you know, their partners and bully people and get things out of people. And they are replacing the almost sacrosanct doctor, you know, physician-patient relationship with technocrats and bureaucrats. This is why the communists in the Soviet Union, whenever they went to a village where the people were not really keen on the whole idea of, you know, communal property, because they're like, well, I don't want to share my labor, I want to do my piece and then trade it away, they would always kill the doctor in town. Because what the doctor does is he takes away your pain. And when you are in pain and there's no one to take away that pain, you will turn to whichever authority will do it, and the government comes in and promises to take away your pain, provided you give it your allegiance. That's the game. That's how bad this
well,
is.
You know, sorry.
No, go.
I heard you take a breath. I thought you were done.
I am.
One of the things I think that people, we've lost in this country because of my age, I grew up in the Cold War. I grew up in the scary to death, the boogeyman, the communists, and all of that, you know, so we were very educated on what totalitarian was. You know, we were the post Second World War generation, you know, so I grew up with parents that were, my dad was in the Korean War, which is, you know, I mean, that's give or take a couple of years there. But we grew up with that 20 million people, you know, killed to defeat bad guys all over the world, you know, whether it was the Japanese or the Nazis, and then we rolled right into the Cold War. So that was all very, very fresh to us. But somewhere along the line, in the 90s, when the USSR fell, all of a sudden the concept of communism and all the fears of communism and all that stuff, it just went away. It just left the dialogue like it was over, like we had defeated Russia. And because of that, it didn't exist anymore. The ideals went away with it. And what they don't understand is, you know, the idea foundation for communism came out of Europe. And some of the progressive dialogue and concepts came out of America that the Russians, that the communist Russians adopted, you know, out of the progressive movement in the United States. And it's just, it's that thing that we talk about, and I like to bring up a little bit often, is know your history. Because for some reason, you know, you would think this was 100 years ago. It wasn't. It was 50, 60 years ago. And as far as Russia was concerned, or the USSR, that was just the 90s. So here we are. They're in the Marxist, socialist, communist, I don't care what you want to call them, they're in full court press right now. They have waited for a time in America where all the dynamics, all the stuff came together with the crash and everything else, with you know, had both houses, control of both houses in the presidency, and this new, you know, hope and change guys slide right in to this position, and they all came out of the woodwork, and they're in full court press. And I don't care if it's Obamacare, the NSA, you know, $1 trillion over budget every year, the Fed printing money or borrowing money from our enemies. I mean, I don't care what it is. I mean, it's on all fronts. And I really believe that that's why a lot of people have tuned out, is they can't navigate it. You know, that's just so overwhelming. And the part of the problem is they watch, you know, standard news, you know, so you're going to get overwhelmed with frivolous crap that really doesn't get to the heart of the issue. You have to be willing to take the time to educate yourself and plug into people who are a little bit cutting edge on sifting through the crap, because that's really what we try to do, is to bring a sane dialogue to the noise, because that's what it is. It's just constant noise, overwhelming. You know, the economy has, I mean, you tell me, I've not met one person get up and go, hey, the economy has been good for me.
Oh,
we're
I know
in
a lot of
fifth
people.
Year. No, I don't
no, I know
a
lot
anybody.
Of people. Oh, hmm? I know plenty of people who say the economy is great. Of course, I live in the Imperial City, and we've got all the money in the whole country floating around here.
Yeah.
If you are within
they hand it out there on the street, don't they?
Well, I don't know if they hand it out on the street, because there's certainly a lot of people that are disadvantaged here. But if you're within 25 miles of Washington, D.C., which used to stand for District of Columbia, to honor Christopher Columbus, who, you know, made the modern discovery of North America, both Americas, actually. But it's now the District of Corruption. The money is printed up by the Mint. It's fabricated by the Federal Reserve up in New York, and then it's handed out to all the political interests, all the lobbyists on K Street, all of the so-called contractors all over, you know, the Maryland and Virginia suburbs of D.C. All the money's here. If you want some of the money, come here and look for work. We got a low unemployment rate. But if you go outside of this area, it is a wasteland, and Detroit is not the first, nor will be the last, to become a ghost town. Go ahead. Sorry, I just wanted to let you know that there are people doing very, very well here.
I was just thinking, are we still on Obamacare?
Unfortunately, that's fine. I mean, look, back in September when Ted Cruz was doing and Mike Lee were doing the push to defund this thing, you know, we did those four special Thursday shows. Folks, we worked our asses off for that, and they are available on the Tex and Rex show page. Chris and I tore through Obamacare from every angle you could think of, and leading up to the, you know, so-called shutdown and all that stuff. I'm sick of talking about this thing. We've been talking about this thing for four friggin' years. If you look at it historically, we've been talking about it since the socialists decided to, you know, fabricate this disaster. But it is important, and it's important because this is going to be the campaign issue, although it's likely to be overshadowed soon by the December 13th so-called budget talks, and then the January 15th and February 7th, you know, government re-shutdown and debt ceiling re-raising or whatever the hell they want to call it. But it is a big deal. And the thing is that the people that are disappointed in this are the people who believed that this was going to solve the healthcare problems in this country, and they fell for the lies and the rhetoric, and now they're disappointed realizing that it's not working the way that it was sold. Some of us told you that, and we were demonized as teabaggers and right-wing nut jobs and legislative arsonists and jihad terrorists and bomb-strapping, whatever. And then, of course, we were told, y'all really have to tone down your rhetoric. Well, screw you, because your rhetoric was more incendiary, and it was also crap. But the fact is that some of us knew that this thing was going to turn out this way, and some of us fell for it. And those that fell for it are the ones on the left that are now disappointed. Of course, some of them are only disappointed because this is not yet a universal health care system. All you're going to get when this thing collapses is universal Medicaid, which is shit, and it's already broke. It's 29
$30 trillion
unfunded. So, I mean, there's not enough money to make these things work. You know, and they always focus on the intention. Nobody's saying people should be taken care of. But when you really add it all up, Chris, there's like maybe 1.5 million people in this country that truly cannot qualify for what's available now in the private market for insurance. 1.5 million people. Now, if you're one of those 1.5 million, it really sucks. But we're a nation of 300+ million that in a good year can do 16 plus trillion of economic output. I think we can find ways to take care of these 1.5 million people. But when you take care of 1.5 million people by booting 2+ million people off their own insurance, you really haven't solved the problem. You've made one worse. And even back in 2010, in 2010, these pricks knew that about half of the people in the private insurance market would lose their coverage. They didn't care. Now people are starting to get the letters and they're starting to get upset. Well, you should be upset because this was the way it was intended. It's not some kind of mistake. Now, remember what the imperial president said about if you have insurance, you get to keep it. Did anybody really?
If you have a doctor, you get to keep it.
Yeah. Did people really believe that? I mean, listen to how many times he said it, and listen to the certainty. It's a 30-minute clip, but listen to the certainty with which he says. I mean, this guy is beyond a professional liar. Just listen to the certainty with which he says this over and over again, knowing it's a lie.
Keep your plan if you are satisfied with it. If you like your plan and you like your doctor, you won't have to do a thing. You keep your plan. If you want to keep the health insurance you got, you can keep it. Actually, any insurance that you currently have would be grandfathered in so you could keep. And so you could decide not to get, in the exchange, the better plan. I could keep my Acme insurance, just a high-deductible, catastrophic plan. I would not be required to get the better one.
I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
Now he knows nothing about that. Now he knows nothing. You know, like, yeah, I didn't know the website wasn't tested. I didn't know that you wouldn't be able to keep your plan because I thought you would. I mean, this is a signature piece of legislation. He knows nothing about it. It's pretty amazing.
Well, not just that. They're doing the spin of, well, it's obvious that any plan, you know, those are lesser plans, and we want to get them on the good stuff, and bullcrap. You know, they're trying to spin away from this, and it's pretty sad, really. And what the only good thing about this is that even the leftist news media is getting pretty upset at this because they were selling the shit out of this crap. Whoop, there's the third one.
Yeah, they're starting to look pretty lousy for having been such shills for it. And look, the amazing thing is that let's just give them the benefit of the doubt, even though it's a complete lie. You know, let's just say that these, 10 mandatory minimum provisions that they've required may actually make these Obamacare exchange plans better. Let's just say that they do. Who are you to decide if it's better for me? And if it's so much better, why are you threatening me under tax and fine if I don't buy one of these new plans? What if I'm happy with my Acme plan that's got a high deductible, it's only catastrophic? What if I don't go see the doctor all that often and I don't want to insure against that risk? What if I want to pay cash for my doctor and the only risk I want to insure against is, you know, a $35,000 hospital stay?
What if if I, as a single male, don't want to have pregnancy care?
Well, why wouldn't you want pregnancy care? I mean, that's ridiculous. Oh, wait. I'm just saying, like, I forget the name of the congresswoman, but she basically asked the bellies, like, have you ever seen a situation where a man got pregnant? It was really good. And it's on our,
page. Maybe in the new America they're going to have that. I don't know. Things are changing.
Well, you know, you got all these transgender, trans testicles these days. I guess anything's possible with science. But I got to put it to you this way. I know a lot of really tough guys, present company included. But I'm pretty sure that every single guy I know could not handle the ordeal of childbirth. We're just not biologically equipped to handle that kind of stress. Our strengths are in a totally different way. But that's besides the point. The thing is that this is a product that is designed to pay for your medical care. It is not your medical care. When you conflate the two, when you conflate insurance and medicine, you got a serious problem. Now, I'm not saying the insurance companies haven't done it, but keep in mind, who wrote this friggin' law? It wasn't the congressmen and the senators, because they didn't even read it before they passed it. It certainly wasn't Obama, judging from the fact he hasn't read anything other than what's on the teleprompter. He's like Ron Burgundy. He doesn't even know what he's saying. He just reads what's on the teleprompter. He doesn't seem to know shit about anything that he's done, which makes you wonder, why on earth are you the president? But besides the point, this was written this was written by certain insurance companies to benefit them at the expense of us, the physicians, and the other insurance companies who aren't in the know. That's pretty much how simple it is. Now, here's the interesting thing. A lot of this information is starting to come out about how thuggish this IRS DHS executive department debacle to take over your medicine and your insurance is. And even the, you know, progressive side of the corporatist mainstream media is starting to mention it. Here's 3 minutes from the Communist News Network talking about how this administration is leaning on insurers to keep their mouth shut about how they're being bullied into doing these things. Because one of the things that they're doing, and I got a Megyn Kelly clip coming up with Congressman Pallone, where they're basically saying that, well, you know, Obama was not lying. He was telling the truth. You can keep your plan. Now, if the insurance companies decide that they want to cancel your plan, well, that's on them. But here's why this is happening. First of all, it's because it's mandated in the law. And second of all, there's threats going out if anybody speaks out about it. Just listen, it's very interesting because you have to understand what's going on behind the scenes. And the reason this is important is not just to know how bad Obamacare is and how bad the Democrats are. The reason this is important is because it shows you in the political game, not the kabuki theater, but the real game of electoral politics, something like this doesn't come along too often. This is handing victory to the opposition. The problem with the opposition that we have, the so-called grand old party, is they don't want this victory. It's so easy to win now, and they don't want it. Just listen to this.
Appreciate the reporting. Thanks. Now more breaking news. Evidence that the Obama administration is leaning on insurance companies to keep a lid on problems with the health care law rollout. Now, Drew Griffin on CNN's Investigations did the reporting. So, Drew, what's going on here? What have you learned?
Anderson, what's going on is behind-the-scenes attempt by the White House to at least keep insurers from publicly criticizing what is happening under this Affordable Care Act rollout. Basically, if you speak out, if you are quoted, you're going to get a call from the White House, pressure to be quiet. Several sources tell me, and my colleague Chris Freites, that insurance executives are being told to keep quiet. Bob Lazuski, who heads the Health Policy and Strategy Associates, a consulting firm for big insurance and an outspoken critic of Obamacare, says he is getting calls from these executives who want him to speak out, Anderson, for them about the problems because they feel defenseless against the White House PR team. Lazuski told me today the White House is exerting massive pressure on the industry, including the trade associations, to keep quiet. The source is telling us they feared White House retribution.
So, I mean, what specifically do they say they're being told to keep quiet about?
about the fact that clarifications were made to the Affordable Care Act after the law was passed, and those clarifications are forcing the insurance industry to drop insurance plans that do not meet Obamacare requirements. There's a lot of coverage now required in these plans. That was not part of many people's private health care plans. Those are the people, Anderson, who are being dropped. And despite all the rhetoric, from the president, you simply cannot keep your current health care plan if it does not meet these requirements. Lazuski says the insurance industry is embarrassed about canceling the plans, but in an interview last week, he told me the administration was warned about this very scenario and ignored the advice.
When the regulations were being put together, people in the insurance industry said, you're being overly regulatory, you're requiring too many things, you're making this too complicated, you're not letting people keep their plans who have them now. The Obama administration decided to do it the way the Obama administration was going to do it. One of the things I think that's clear here is the Obama administration has no trust in anything the health insurance industry tells them about how to run a health plan. And I think the administrative mess you're seeing right now is indicative of what happens when somebody tries to run somebody else's business who thinks they're smarter than you are.
So, Drew, why would the insurance industry not be willing to challenge the White House publicly?
Well, the executives are willing to listen to the White House because right now it is the federal government that's the biggest customer for these insurance companies. Government-backed plans accounted for about 48% of healthcare policies last year, Anderson, a number that's expected to grow this year and years to come. So basically, the insurance companies are in a position to just be quiet for fear of offending basically their biggest source of income.
That's the insidious, friggin' nature of corporatism, corporativism, or fascism. It's basically what happens when you mix private industry with government power. You get this incestuous back-and-forth relationship that just engenders corruption in both the business end of the equation and the government end. And the messed up thing, and what most people don't understand, is insurance generally is regulated at the state level. So you've got 50 different insurance regulators in the country who do a little more regulation, a little less regulation, a little this, a little that, depending on how their populace and their state and their citizens, saw fit to develop it. Now what you have is you have mandates from a federal level that are required everywhere, and it benefits the insurance companies that like these particular mandates and can afford these particular mandates, and it crowds out the others, and it reduces innovation and forces you to get things that you don't need, and it adds to cost, and it's an absolute disaster. But isn't that interesting, Chris, that the executives that warned the administration about this, of course they didn't care because this was the plan, they are now caught between a rock and a hard place. One, their bottom line is affected by the fact that this is their biggest customer, and two, they're being bullied into keeping their mouth shut so that we, the people, can't find out the truth. Isn't that amazing?
Well, it reminds me of all those communist espionage novels I read when I was growing up. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just mind-boggling that we've come this far this fast, and I know that it's been a hundred-year plan with the progressives since, you know, the Fed was introduced and income tax and all that wonderful stuff, but it's amazing how fast this has all accelerated on all fronts, you know, starting with the Bush era and the Patriot Act. It just seems that somewhere along the line, we were living our lives, we were working, we were chasing the American dream, we were putting money away, we were saving for the future, saving for retirement and doing all those wonderful things. And all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, in less than a decade or around a decade, it all just flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And now we're being spied on and we're being forced to buy things that we don't want to buy, and you can't speak out, and news agencies are threatened. You know, the whole AP scandal, the Rosen scandal, all these things, it's all happening in the last couple, 3-4 years. And the thing that's amazing to me is that with all the wealth and power and strength in the free enterprise system in this country, how so much of it in a blink of an eye is now being controlled by one office. That is just mind-boggling some days.
Well, I think, I mean, the nature of this modern technocratic neo-feudal empire that they're building is that it has all of the trappings of the republic and liberty and singing the national anthem at ball games and you know, having all the useless products which you don't need and all the banal, crappy entertainment and as much pornography and shitty remakes of crappy TV shows and the movies as you want. It's just the modern-day version of bread and circuses to distract you while they put this in place. I mean, did you think that the American people and whoever you are, whether your ancestors came over here 50,000 years ago crossing what is now the Bering Sea up in Alaska, or they came over on the Mayflower, or they were with John Smith in Jamestown, or they came over on a Spanish galleon, landed in St. Augustine, Florida, or you came over, you know, through Staten Island, you know, Italians and Irish and other European immigrants, you know, in the 30s, or maybe your family came here 10 years ago through the front door. It doesn't matter. You got up from wherever you were, and you came here to take advantage of the opportunities of religious freedom and economic freedom, to do something with your life, to make it valuable, to contribute to society, to help those who are less fortunate than you are, and to build it up yourself. Did you ever think that this type of culture, this type of race of people, and I will say we are a race because I think Americans are different than everybody else in the world because everybody else in the world have lived where they are for a long time under all sorts of different types of tyrannies. People got up and left home to come here and make something of themselves on their own. Did you ever think that the government would be spying on every phone call, email, text? And we would sit back and go, oh, well, that kind of sucks, but, you know, dancing with the douchebags is on, so, well, it's no big deal, because if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you mind? I mean, did you think that would happen? No, go ahead.
Our founding fathers had a lot of wisdom, and they had the history of the world, you know, to set down and introspectively decide, how are we going to put this government together? What kind of power do we want to hand the government, and how do we bind that power so that this central government does not become totalitarian? Because we, you know, most of the history of the world has been totalitarian to some form or another, whether you talk about Genghis Khan or kings and queens or whatever the case may be. All the way back, we have all that history. So these guys are standing here on this great new land, and they're going, okay, 13 individual countries, 13 individual states said we need a central, almost like a clearinghouse. You know what I'm saying? Somebody to take care of wars and trade, and so that we can work together, us 13 individual states, and can work together and solve our differences and have a monetary system and national defense. And when they put this together, they had the greatest fear. They just fought a war to get rid of a tyrant. And their greatest fear was to have a centralized government that became a tyrant, and they built the whole damn constitution was put together, and the Bill of Rights, you know, to empower the individual and empower the states. Here we are, and I'm just like going, you know, from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, you know, forward, especially in the last 10, 12 years that we've reached this point. I mean, it is accelerate. I can honestly say I'm not surprised at where we're at. I'm surprised at the speed that we got here. Does that make
sense?
Well,
yeah, I mean, it was a slow, gradual build-up because you got to indoctrinate each successive generation to accept more and more and more of this crap. But basically, what 9/11, and I don't care if you're a truther and you think it was an inside job, if you're convinced it was, you know, some douchebag Saudi al-Qaeda terrorist, or if you think it was a little bit of both where there were the Saudi terrorists and maybe some people in government allowed it to happen, whatever, I don't care. It happened, okay? We were hit. We were all a little freaked out by it, And then here comes this thing that says, well, you know, one of the reasons this happened is our intelligence agencies aren't communicating well. Why do we have, like, 40 different friggin' intelligence agencies? Why don't we just have one? I mean, do we really need 42 different spy networks? But in any event, so the Patriot Act comes along to solve this problem. But all it did was build a police state. And now you're seeing it come more and more online, and some people aren't liking it. And the funny thing is that, generally speaking, the people that wouldn't like this robust security state would be the ones on the so-called left. But ever since their Hopi Changey guy got in charge of the police state, they've been fucking quiet. Yeah, I dropped the F-bomb, but sorry, this just pisses me off. And the simple fact is that as soon as this power shifts back to the other team, like let's say it was Mitt Romney, they'd be freaking out about it. But it's all rhetorical crap, because it's only when their team is in charge, when the Republicans are in charge, they bitch. When the Democrats are in charge, everything's hunky-dory, and so it is for the other team. If George Bush is building a police state, you're totally happy with it. If Barack Obama is doing it, oh, it's socialism. It's the same thing. And the fact is that it was a long time coming, but then ever since basically 9/11, the pace has been accelerating, and we are being conditioned more and more to accept this stuff and to want it for our own protection. The amazing thing is that the wheels are coming off this thing. And if people would stop quibbling with each other about labels, about pet peeve issues, or cult of personality candidates, and start really looking at the difference between liberty and tyranny, and why the Constitution allows us to live different lives based on a different outlook and a different direction together in harmony, then they would really start to mount a strong coalition against this corruption and start putting people in power who will actually help us roll this thing back. I mean, these days, I don't much care what a candidate stands for. I'm more interested in what he's going to undo about this mess that we've got. But here, and I really want to get off Obamacare and get into other things, but real quick, just before we go to the top of the hour, Chris, unless you got anything you want to add, I got in a 5.5-minute clip. Megyn Kelly is one of the, you know, insipid blondes on Fox News. They moved her to the evenings, and she's basically been trying to boost up her creds by having Rand on and Ted Cruz on and all this stuff. But here she gets into it with a congressman over how bad this thing is. You got anything you want to throw in there before I play?
No. Give her hell.
All right, here we go. And it's just watch for Pallone, I think his name is. He's a Democrat. Watch for how he tries to spin this in Obama's favor and put the blame for all of the problems on the, quote, free market. Just listen to their rhetoric, because they're teeing this up to blame the free market for the failures so that you will say, well, the free market failed. We have to rely on government. That's what they're trying to get you to do. Just listen to his words.
Broken promise that people who liked their health care plans could keep them despite the passage of Obamacare. Here's Republican Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn challenging Secretary Sebelius on that this morning.
Madam Secretary, during and after the law was passed, the president kept saying, if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. So is he keeping his promise?
Yes, he is.
Joining me now, Democratic New Jersey Congressman Frank Pallone. He's a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. He was one of the lawmakers questioning the secretary today. Congressman, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
That we're struggling to understand how Ms. Sebelius can say the president kept that promise, that specific one of, if you like your health care, you can keep it, period, I guarantee it, when we've seen 2 million Americans have their policies canceled so far, and the estimates are it'll top 10 million.
Well, you can keep it as long as the insurance company agrees to continue to sell it, but the problem is a lot of insurance companies now have been caught because they're selling lousy plans at a high price that are skeletal and don't provide any benefits. So they're now canceling those lousy plans, in which case many of them are just a scam, and saying, look, we're not going to sell this anymore because nobody's going to buy it, and therefore we'll give you a better plan that has better benefits at a more affordable price. So the president never said that he could stop the insurance companies from canceling plans. This is a private market. This is a competitive market.
But
they're not going to sell something
true.
They can't sell.
But what you're saying is
only
partially
true. Partially
there are
true.
Some insurance companies who cancel policies, and that's what insurance companies...
They cancel the policies.
Let me say
they
that
don't
my,
have
let,
to
let
sell
me,
them.
Let
it's
me
a
pose
private
the
market.
Let me pose the question, then you respond. Some of the insurance companies said, all right, I'm going to cancel the policies, because that happens in the insurance market. But,
right.
But... many, many other policies. In fact, according to the insurance companies, the vast majority of these policies that are being canceled because The regulations imposed on them by Obamacare left them with no choice. The way
that
the
is absolutely not true. They have a right to continue the policies the way they want.
She admitted it today, sir.
He did not admit that. That's
she did
simply
too.
Not true.
She was asked
the insurance
about whether
companies can cancel the policies if they want to. They can also offer the policies at the same price with the same lousy benefits
if they
want to.
If they change the policies in any marginal way, then Obamacare requires that they be canceled and the people get kicked off.
No, that's not
yes.
true.
She
Obamacare
was asked about
simply requires
a $5
it's
increase.
Not true.
Wait,
Obamacare
says
simply.
Let's run the soundbite.
Yeah,
$5 change.
Look,
$5
Obamacare
change,
simply
and
says
Watch,
that you can
by.
Continue to.
If coinsurance went up by any amount, even by a dollar, according to your regulations, that would not qualify as a grandfathered clause. Just to have that out there for the record, I gather even by a dollar.
Dr. Cassidy, I want to start by the amount that you gave is not accurate. I was told $5, not a dollar.
For that,
so she's not saying, no, that you're wrong. They can't cancel the people if that policy changes by $5. She's saying, yes, you're right. If they up your premium by $5, it's canceled. Obamacare kicks in. The person gets a cancellation notice, and they're wondering where to get their insurance.
They tell them where they can get the insurance. Look, the bottom line is if you're selling a lousy policy at a price that's too high, nobody's going to buy it. And so they're canceling these policies because they know people won't buy them.
Okay.
It's a competitive market.
But they were
that's
buying
the
them. They were buying them. There were 15
but
million people
buy
bought
them
anymore and said, I like them, Mr. Pallone. I like them.
They're not going to buy them anymore when they have a better alternative
to
that
you.
Provides the best. Well, I can't go out as an insurance company and sell a lousy policy anymore at a high price.
You could.
Because there are
people like it. Why do you get to decide
no.
what's lousy? Why can't the American people
it's
say,
it's
lousy
it's
for you, for me, I like it?
It's capitalism. You can go out and buy whatever you want, but the insurance company realizes they can't sell this lousy insurance policy anymore.
But they were selling
anymore.
It, sir. You're ignoring
because
my
now
point.
They
were selling
now
it. Some 15 million
though.
Americans thought it was great. You didn't like it, but they liked it. And then you and the president
because
came out and guaranteed people that they could keep it, period, period.
You're not,
when you make
but
a guarantee.
You can't sell it. Nobody's going to buy it. Nobody's going to buy it if there's a better alternative out there that gives you better insurance for a lower price. And that's what the Affordable Care Act offers.
It's
so that's why these insurance companies are canceling, because they know they can't sell that lousy policy
true,
anymore.
That's just
well,
not
it
true.
Is true.
It's not
well,
true.
It is. Of course it's true. Well, you
well,
deny
we'll
it.
Let
but,
the, we'll,
you
let,
know.
Well, let the viewers decide. I'll
let
them.
The marketplace decide.
Thank
Let
you for coming on, sir.
Decide.
Well, the marketplace
sure.
would like to decide, but they've been told by the president and the Democrats,
yeah.
thanks to Obamacare, that they
no,
can't.
No, it's a capitalist private market. People
Isn't.
Will choose.
The capitalist private market is controlled by
is
laws,
better.
Including one called Obamacare, which imposed a bunch of regulations on them with which they must now comply, sir.
You can't sell the policy if nobody's going to buy it because it's lousy. And
but
that's
15
what
million people did buy it. They bought it, and they were told they could keep it, and now they can't, and I got to go,
then they,
period. Thank you, sir. Thanks for being here.
What a piece of crap.
I tried. I it's so much better when you can have a real exchange on the actual issues. And anyway, listen.
Now, I got to say, on that particular segment, Megan, you know, did a pretty good job. She doesn't always, but especially when she's shilling for Romney. But nevertheless, wasn't that fascinating? I mean, he's using words like, you know, that's the competitive market. It's capitalism. He's blaming the free market on these mandatory cancellations. And then he tells her that what she, you know, Megan said wasn't true. And then she plays the clip where I think it was Rogers was grilling Sebelius and told her that, you know, if someone's premium goes up by a dollar, then their plan won't be grandfathered. And then she goes, well, let me make a correction. And you're thinking, oh, here
$5.
And like weasel her way out. She goes, she said, I was told it's $5. What do you mean you were told? You're the secretary of HHS. This bill, the PACA bill, so-called Patient Protection, the so-called Unaffordable Care Act, which was 2,700 pages, most of it was referential to giving the secretary of HHS power to write regulations. And she has to be told that it was $5. First of all, the question is, when was the last time your medical insurance premium annually didn't go up by at least $5? Bunch of crap. And what's ridiculous about it, Chris, is that they finagled this thing so that the laws force certain reactions from the insurance companies, not only because of compliance, but because they have to adjust some plans, and then they're forced to cancel them because they're not compliant. And then you turn around and you blame them for the cancellation. It is such a ruse, and if people don't wake up, especially those who actually thought this thing was going to do what it says it's going to do, this thing, when it collapses, which it's going to, instead of turning towards the free market to solve the problems that were created by this very bill, they're going to go for single payer, and that's what they're hoping for, and you've got to wake up to make sure that it doesn't happen. But the most insidious part of it is, well, you know, they can't sell these lousy plans. Well, they were selling these so-called lousy plans, but Chris, you remember when there was a country called Yugoslavia, and they made a car, it was called the Yugo. It was really a piece of shit car, but people bought it because it was cheap, and there is this thing. When you're making choices in the market, there's this push and pull between supply and demand, and you've also got this independent choice that you can make as to whether you want to spend less and get something that's a little more bare bones or whether you want to spend more and get something that's a little more robust. And what the hell is wrong with having a, quote, bare-bones skeleton plan? He called it a scam. But what if I don't want hard on medication covered? What if I don't want sex change operations covered? What if I don't want all my doctor's visits to only cost $5 because I only go once every 2 or 3 years? But what I really am concerned about is when I'm bungee jumping, I injure myself and I have to go to the hospital and I don't have $25,000, so I want, you know, a limit on that I got a $5,000 max out-of-pocket expense, and then the insurance company picks up the balance. What if I want that? You're telling me that I can't have it. It's ridiculous. Your thoughts on that, Cliff?
Yeah. Well, and that this is what we're up against. You cannot regulate to this degree because it's going to destroy it. It's going to destroy the system. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And I was thinking about, you know, the argument that people talk about socialized medicine or single payer, whatever you want to call it, most of these countries that have this type of medical care plus, it's not what people think it is, and there's a lot more problems with it than get reported in the U.S. media. Because I know people from Europe, but these are very small countries with small populations. This system, it would just crash it. It's just unbelievable that these people still tout this crap. You know, when you go to Canada, it isn't whether or not you get health care or not, it's how long you're going to wait, you know, and that's why people come to America. You know, they fly here to get operations so they don't have to wait. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how something can be such a large portion of our society and the real important information does not get discussed. And Megyn Kelly kind of got in a tit-for-tat with him, and she missed some, you know, important points that needed to be talked about, which, in my opinion, all of them do. And you know, we talk about this between you and I all the time, but here's the thing that people don't understand. You think that it's expensive now? Their billion-dollar website failed, all right? So they're going to have to throw in a whole bunch of more money into it. People are getting kicked off their insurance. They're getting their insurance is going through the ceiling. Okay, that's just the start. That's the first 2 months. What do you think it's going to be like in 6 months or a year or 2 years when this bureaucratical nightmare and all these added costs and expenses, and plus who's talking about this is one of the biggest tax increases in the history of our country? I mean, this whole thing is a massive tax increase and nobody's even talking about it. And they just raised our taxes a few months ago. I mean, it is amazing to me that they're getting away with this crap, especially with the Internet and social media and alternate media. Why is it that people aren't wising up? Why are people still confused? Why are people still getting surprised? That just blows me away some days.
Well, we got to take responsibility for that.
American Idol.
We take responsibility for that because here's the thing, and this is a very tempting problem to have, okay? And if you're familiar with your Bible, read Luke, the story of the prodigal son. But the more important aspect is the prodigal son's older brother, right? He's the one that did all the right things, and then he was pissed that his brother who did all the wrong things was received back by his father. And so it's easy for you listening, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, because you're involved and you're active and you're trying to keep informed. It's easy for us to do the same thing because we're trying to inform you. to blame everybody else for this problem. Well, but they don't know. Now, some of them don't care, but a lot of them just don't know. They get their news from Fox News, like that clip we just heard from Megyn Kelly, but that's all they get. And so the idea here is that if you want, and Ron Paul said this all the time, before you can have a political revolution within the form, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, there's blood in the streets and guns and you're trying to take over the government. It means that you are trying to restore the government that you're supposed to have using the tools that you have at your disposal. If you want that, the first thing you need is an intellectual revolution, which means people have to become more informed. Well, if you're one of the informed, it falls upon your shoulders to inform the low-informed and uninformed voters. Now, a lot of people get tastes of this kind of stuff, but because they've been busy running their businesses, raising their families, going to work, going to school, they only got little bits and pieces, and then you overwhelm them with this information, and they tend to want to shut down because it's scary. And they accuse you of being a conspiracy theorist and a pessimist and all this kind of stuff. Well, here's the thing. It is what it is. It isn't about being pessimistic or being optimistic. It's about being realistic. It is what it is. This thing's coming down around our ears, and some of us, like Cassandra, were yelling from the rooftops since this thing was even put forward with Hillary back in the 90s when Newt shut it down. So it's easy to get mad at those others, but really the fact is that you've got to create a groundswell, a grassroots tsunami, as Ted Cruz called it, because that's the only way that the candidates who are and the office holders who are up there fighting this battle have any power and any say. And the simple fact is that there's a lot of flack that the Republicans are getting now, okay, for how they handled the shutdown. The story is being sold that the problem is Ted Cruz promised something that couldn't be done. Ted Cruz promised that he would work to defund it or at least delay it. Well, that's not something that couldn't be done because that's exactly what he did. That's what he was elected by the people of Texas to do, and that's what he came to D.C. to do, and that is exactly what he did. Now, he wasn't successful. He wasn't successful not because he failed. Remember, this guy has only been in office for 9 months. He did more than any other junior senator in history, practically, because the grassroots stood with him and because he was shown to have integrity because he did what he said he was going to do. Whether you agree with it or not is not the point. Whether you like him or not is not the point. He did what he said he was going to do. But then why are the Republican Party's approvals so low? It is because the strategy would have worked had the rhino squishes like McConnell and Corker and McCain and Graham and Boehner and Cantor not and King not made this thing fail. And the reason that the Republican ratings are so low is because the conservative base and the grassroots libertarians and conservatives, which are most of the Republicans, are pissed that they surrendered. We talked about that last week. That's why the ratings are so low, because what Ted Cruz said was going to happen, what Mike Lee said would happen if this thing went on and we didn't defund it and didn't delay it and didn't, is happening now. And now even some Democrats, especially those in more conservative states, are saying, well, maybe we should delay it. Well, you're going to have to delay it, because if this website, which is allegedly coming on at, you know, right after Thanksgiving, allegedly. Now, they had 3.5 years to build it the first time, and they couldn't get it running. Maybe now with this new tech surge, they'll get it up and running by the end of November. Well, the cutoff for signing up for one of these exchange plans for the people that are canceled out of their insurance or didn't have insurance was December 15th. They're going to have to move that, which is basically vindicating exactly what Ted Cruz advocated for. He said, look, you've already given 80% of this law illegal exemptions and delays. Why don't you be fair to the American people and delay it another year? No, they fought tooth and nail to the point where Harry Reid shut down the government in order to fund this law that isn't working now. And all they had to do was delay it. So the Republicans had the victory, and they threw it away in order to box in Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Justin Amash, and all the other real conservatives in Congress, because their fear is that these guys might actually grow and take over the party, and then we lose our cushy positions and cushy jobs, and we can't get our defense contractors and lobbyists to grease our wheels. That's what they're afraid of. And you have to make them more afraid of you than they are of the lobbyists on K Street and the corporatists that are financing their campaigns. That's what you have to do, which means you need a force multiplier. So So we really appreciate, Chris and I very much appreciate, we put a lot of effort into this, but we appreciate that you listened. But that's not enough. You have to get the show out there, and you have to get at least 10 people every week and get each of them to get 10 people to get informed, to get involved, to get the real information, to listen to the idiot box tell you what to think and learn how to think for yourself, because that is the only way we are going to restore the republic when this empire ends. That is the only way.
Well, and we haven't even touched on economics. I mean, Obamacare is, you want to talk about the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, we look at the corruption in government, we look at waste, you know, and duplicate programs, and $1.2 trillion over, you know, over budget every year in the last 5 years. We look at a stalled economy. We look at all these dynamics going on. We look at countries moving away from the IMF. We look at countries moving, you know, moving away from the fiat dollar because they're afraid it's going to crash, which is a logical fear because they never work for very long. But, you know, the whole economics of this is just that in itself is a nightmare, because even if they did, you know, we have the largest tax increase in history with Obamacare. We have a tax increase they just voted in, and Obama's going to come after another one. I mean, they're not done destroying our whole economic system. And the Fed is printing money and dumping it in the system every month, and, you know, to a tune of $1 trillion a year on top of the debt ceiling increase, which right now is unlimited. You know, I mean, it's just, they just, you know, good old McConnell, just kind of like McConnell's rule, let's just take all the power away from the House and the Senate and just hand it to the president. You know, you need money? There you go. You got all the power. I mean, it is mind-boggling, all the different factors that are going on at the same time on top of Obamacare.
Yep, and it's going to come at a faster pace, faster and furiouser, in order to overwhelm you and overwhelm the system. And the only thing that can stop it is the so-called opposition party. Because the simple fact is right now the Democrats, by all accounts, are on their heels. They've been exposed as liars. They've been exposed as incompetent. They've been exposed as a weak political movement that is unpopular with the bulk of the American people.
Well, they increased government. They increased government when we needed a recovery. I mean, that in itself is insanity. Go ahead.
Exactly. And, of course, you can blame George Bush. Well, I don't mind. Blame George Bush. But you can't only blame George Bush. You can blame George Bush along with Democrats and Obama, but you can't just blame George Bush. But the simple fact is that this is, from an electoral standpoint, the easiest time to beat Democrats and the easiest, you know, current sitting president to beat, but the Republicans don't want to. Now, when I say the Republicans don't want to, I'm talking about the, quote, leadership of the party. I'm not talking about rank-and-file Republican voters. I'm not talking about independents who are larger than Democrats and Republicans who might vote Republican. I'm talking about the people who run the show like Priebus and Rove and Boehner and McConnell and all these other pricks. And what they're trying to do is basically use the left-stream media talking points to put down people in their own party. And it is amazing. I mean, they even trotted Romney out today, and I've got a couple of clips we can play on that. But we're only at 45. Yeah, I mean,
I thought he moved back to France.
Oh, I wish he would move back to France. I mean, just, you know, I'd like to punish the French in many ways, and I can't think of a better way to punish them than to have them put up with Romney. But we've only got 45 minutes of show left, and folks are probably going to run a little bit over. But if you're listening live, and there's a bunch of you who are, at midnight Eastern, remember we've dropped back to Eastern Standard Time now, at midnight Eastern you will lose the broadcast live in your browser or mobile device, and the only way you can listen is on your phone. Our call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013 if you want to continue to listen live. Otherwise, just go to the Tex and Rex show page on Blog Talk Radio, and you can listen anytime. But let's get a little positive before we expose more of the crap that's going on. Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky, son of Congressman Ron Paul, who has been talking about what you just brought up, the Fed, economics, and the insanity of government overreach for 40 years. He was on Meet the Press today, and Gregory tried to finagle him to a few things, but they addressed things from the NSA to Obamacare and all sorts of stuff in between. It's about a six-minute clip. What I find interesting, Chris, is this new thing that the left media and the so-called right media are in agreement on, and that is that they're all trying to create this wedge between Ted Cruz and Rand Paul. They don't want these guys working together. They want to create this wedge and kind of get people in the grassroots who are already, for some stupid reason, thinking 2016, when this week in Virginia, Colorado, and New Jersey, we have races of a statewide nature that are very important. And we've got 2014 before 2016, but people are thinking 2016, so they want to divide you into these camps, the fans of Rand Paul and the fans of Ted Cruz. Well, don't be a fan. These are not celebrities. Don't follow the cult of personality. You don't even have to like the candidate you support personally. Follow those who are following the Constitution and support those who are supporting the Constitution. That's the only shot we've got. And quit picking fights with each other over inconsequential bullshit and start working together, because it is us versus them. It is liberty versus tyranny. It is not left versus right, and it isn't libertarians versus conservatives. That's just stupid stuff they use to keep you divided. So here's Rand Paul with, Gregory on, I guess it's NBC Meet the Press.
Let's go to Senator Rand Paul right there. Senator Paul, you just heard Dan Pfeiffer. It's going to be an awesome race. Are you going to be part of it?
I guess that wasn't quite an endorsement from the White House, but we're still working on them. But we actually are working with the White House. And the last time I was with the president, I told him there are some things we can agree on. One is, let's let companies bring money back home, repatriate it, and let's put the tax proceeds into infrastructure. We could double the amount of money in infrastructure if we did that. And that's something we can find an agreement on. I think we should do it next week.
There we go. That's one point that Rand Paul and the White House could be agreeing on. We'll see what happens with that. Let's talk about the NSA. We just heard Dan Pfeiffer weigh in on that as well. He says that clemency for Edward Snowden isn't under consideration at all. Should it be?
You know, I don't know the facts enough to know, because I don't know whether any information has been distributed to foreign powers, and that would be a great deal of concern. I do know that I'm also concerned, though, that the National Defense Director lied to Congress, and I haven't heard of anybody talking about repercussions for him. I think he's seriously damaged our standing in the world. Now we're seen to be spying not only on foreign leaders, but there's an accusation that we spied on the Pope as well. So I think really there are problems, and we've lost a lot of credibility. The only way I think you could start fresh is with somebody new in charge of your intelligence.
Somebody new in charge of intelligence. There's also the suggestion from one of the former NSA chiefs, Bobby Immon, General Bobby Immon, in today's New York Times in an extensive review of the entire NSA program. He says the National Security Agency should get out ahead of all this and put out everything they knew Snowden to have. Do you think that's a good idea?
Maybe, but I think the fundamental question about whether or not this is constitutional or not should not be decided by the administration, shouldn't be decided by a secret court, the FISA court. It needs to get into the Supreme Court. So with Senator Wyden and myself, we've introduced a FISA bill that would allow cases like this to be challenged in open court at the Supreme Court, and we should determine once and all whether or not a single warrant can apply to every American. I don't think it does, and I think the Supreme Court will side with us.
You know, you've taken some heat from inside for your party for your views on privacy and the Fourth Amendment and the National Security Administration, including from congressmen like Peter King, says people like you are trying to exalt Edward Snowden. And the New York Times reported that one of your potential rivals, Ted Cruz, thinks it could be disqualifying in a presidential run. This was in yesterday's New York Times. It says that when Mr. Cruz went to New York City to meet with donors this summer, he told them the Kentucky senator, that's you, Rand Paul, can never be elected president because he can never fully detach himself from the strident libertarianism of his father, former Representative Ron Paul of Texas. How do you respond to that?
You know, what I would say is it's actually an advantage for me to talk about the right to privacy because, you know, you look at the president's numbers dropping with young people. They've dropped 20 points in the last 2 months. I think the reason is because he's not protecting their privacy. Young people don't care so much about taxes and regulation, but they've all got a cell phone and they're all on the Internet and they do care about their privacy. So do I, and I will defend it and I will correct these policies if I were ever the one to make the decision. And I think that will attract new people to the party, not less people.
So you don't think it's disqualifying? What do you think, though, about Senator Cruz? He seems to be catching on. More Republicans now seeing him as a leader in the party than see you as a leader in the party, particularly catching on in Iowa. Do you think he's your chief rival if you choose to run?
I think we're a long way away from that. I haven't even convinced my wife yet whether I should do this. So we're a ways away from making a decision. But Ted and I are friends, and he's a limited government conservative. We don't always agree on everything, but we agree on a lot of things. So I won't be coming on television to try to disparage him, whether we're ever rivals or not.
You heard Dan Pfeiffer there say that he is confident that the website problems are going to be fixed by the end of November. And one of the success stories, it appears, so far is the in your own state, the Kentucky website seems to be doing pretty well. 26,000 Kentuckians have signed up for the exchange. What do you make of that fact that so many Kentuckians are signing up? And does that tell you that this program can be a success?
Well, nearly 90% of them are signing up for Medicaid, free health insurance from the government. My concern is not that we shouldn't help people. I do want to help these people to get insurance, but there is going to be a cost. And in my state, we have a lot of rural hospitals that teeter in the balance. My fear is that these hospitals may be bankrupt by overwhelming them with Medicaid patients. Same with doctors. Some may leave the community. Some may discontinue seeing Medicaid patients if they're overwhelmed. So I see the positive, but I also see the negative. And the real problem is we're driving everyone out of the individual market, and there's going to be four plans. Where there were once hundreds of plans that you could choose from, there's now four government-mandated plans. If your insurance doesn't meet because it's not as good as them, you can't buy it. But even if it's too good, I had people all across Kentucky come up to me last week and say, I had great insurance, but mine's better than the president says I should have, and I've got to either pay a tax or step down to a less good insurance plan.
So you're saying even if the website problems are fixed, you're not confident that Obamacare is going to work?
You know, I think government is inherently inept because they don't work on a profit motive. Government has to do certain things. There's a certain safety net. There's national defense. There are roads. There's a judiciary. There's Congress. And I'm plus minus on whether we should fund Congress. But I would say that there are fundamental things government can do, but government shouldn't take on new opportunities or new things to do when it's not managing what it has now. For example, Medicaid is $35 to $40 trillion short currently. So when we add a new entitlement program onto another one that's already struggling, I just don't think it was a good idea.
Smooth, brilliant. I just, you know, every time I hear Rand being interviewed and, you know, they come at him, they try to trip him up. It's kind of interesting. You know, I think that people forget that Rand is a doctor. And he practiced for 20 years, and he still does, you know, eye surgery and stuff like that, you know, to stay in practice. And he also does a lot of volunteer work and things like that. But Rand knows his stuff when it comes to the medical industry. So he's nobody's fool. So I think that they're careful with him. But I find that when they try to corner him, that he knows exactly who he is, what he believes in, and he has the ability to turn it around without getting people upset at him. And I really appreciate that. So anyway, you know, basically what Rand is saying is so important. You know, the president's running around, you know, claiming, oh, my God, all these people are signing up. Look, it's working. Well, it's bull crap. Just like what Rand was saying, most of the people that are signing up are the Medicaid, Medicare rollovers. You know, they're just rolling those people into Obamacare. And so, you know, there's just a lot of deception in this whole thing. I mean, I don't know how much more you want to beat this to death tonight. Where are you at with this?
I mean, it's nonstop, so, I mean, we got to keep talking about it. But, no, I agree with you. What I thought was really good, though, was not only do you see how Rand handles reporters, you know, especially when they tried to create that wedge between him and Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
And by the way, I said that was Gregory, who I think does a different show.
Snuffleupagus.
I think he does Meet the Press. I think this was Face the Nation. I don't know. Anyway, that was George Snuffleupagus, who used to be on Sesame Street. He was Big Bird's invisible friend, and he was also Clinton's press secretary. But whatever. They're all the same to me. But bunch of friggin' overpaid idiots that try to shill for statism. But, you know, Rand made a very powerful statement. He says, I think government is inherently inept because it doesn't work on a profit motive. It's a very powerful statement. This is an important statement for real conservatives and real libertarians, and it is important for everybody if you understood what it was. Because there are many ways to make a profit. Profit in and of itself is not an inherently bad thing. It can be if you make your profit with a con, with fraud, with coercion, but it is not a bad thing if you make a profit because you earned the right to it in a competitive marketplace and the consumers decided that you deserve that profit. In fact, not only is it important to know that that's what someone has a right to if they manage your business well and can satisfy the consumer in an honest way and deliver the goods and services the consumer wants so that they reward them with more business. That feedback mechanism of profit by keeping costs managed and delivering superior service and product. Now, superior service and product doesn't mean it necessarily even has to be the best product. Superior sometimes means a less than top-of-the-shelf product for a better price for those who don't want to spend the money on something. Not everybody wants to drive a Cadillac or a Lincoln or a Lexus. Some people prefer Fords and Buicks and Toyotas. And that is your choice as a consumer, and whoever can satisfy that need deserves the profit. The profit is the feedback mechanism that tells the entrepreneur if they are successful in delivering what the market is asking for. And that is a very important thing to understand because it is inherently absent from government. That doesn't mean that people in government aren't making boatloads of money. But what it means is that that money is appropriated through coercion and graft. It is not earned profit. And so, therefore, their feedback mechanism is they get rewarded for doing the bidding of whoever it is that hired them or whoever it is. I mean, Sebelius said it. She goes, the people that want me to resign are the people I don't work for. Sorry, Ms. Secretary, but you're supposed to work for everybody in the United States as a secretary in the executive department. But that's not the way she sees it. That's not the way most of them see it. Absent a profit motive, you don't care about costs. In fact, you want more costs because that likely means you're going to get a bigger budget next year handed to you, whereby if you're in the marketplace, you do care about costs because if you reduce costs, you can hopefully increase profitability so long as you don't compromise the product and the service and the delivery of it to the consumer. Otherwise, you lose the consumer. So it is a very, very important point, and that's precisely why the government has certain things it should do. You don't really want a profit incentive, for example, in military usage, okay? Because if it becomes profitable, then you're like, hey, you know what? We haven't had a war for a while. Maybe we should go blow some shit up. It'll make us money. Oh, wait a minute. That's what's happening. You see, that's the problem with profit in certain things. But then you take profit out of other things like, oh, I don't know, the insurance market. Well, if insurance companies are forced to offer certain things that they thought some people didn't want, but they're not getting that profit feedback mechanism, then the whole thing collapses. So there are certain things the government is supposed to do and certain things that it should never do. And guess what? That debate was had over 220 years ago. It was called the Constitutional Convention, and they gave the federal government from the states enumerated powers to do certain things. And in Article 9, they said these are things it should never do. And then there were some amendments made, some of them good, some of them bad. But the simple fact is that right now this constitutional Republican small r government is acting as a hegemonic empire across the globe, and it is acting as a police state here because it is a police state. They're not only spying on you. They don't only have every financial transaction you engage in recorded and documented. They don't only have all your personal information in tax records to the IRS. But now If you don't buy their chosen insurance product from their chosen corporations, they're going to come after you. They're going to seize your assets. They're going to fine you. And at some point, they're going to start imprisoning people. That's a police state. That is not a free republic. And that's the problem.
They're already,
the thing about the,
and they're already coming after you. They're, you know, like I said, it's the largest tax increase in history. You know, and nobody even talks about that. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Our economy is flat, and this thing is costing a fortune, and they're talking about 2.5 times more than they projected. The website alone, $643 million, $1 billion if you look at the states, you know, everything involved. And it's a total mess and a total failure, and 6 people signed up the first day. And the thing's been shut down more than it's run. People's information is at risk. And people are losing their insurance. I mean, this is on top of, you know, a 0.0-something% economy. It's mind-boggling that these people have this progressive socialist dream is so embedded. You see, here's the problem, Rex. The ends do justify the means to these people. And that is so alien to the way people like you and I think, or, you know, Christians in general, or, you know, most people, you know, that there is a moral code to life and business and government. And when government, you know, and the thing that I think sometimes people get a little confused is they try to take their morality and lay it over government, then they get all upset that government's not moral. Well, government was never designed to be moral. It's supposed to be, here's the laws, here's the rules, and then the government follows those laws and those rules, and politicians are supposed to enact or protect, you know, the country and the laws and the rules. That's so out of control right now. And you have all these different – and this is something – you know, I know you have mixed views on Morton Friedman, but, you know, he had an interview, and one of these days we should play it, because he talked about – you know, this is several – I don't know, a couple decades ago he was on an interview, and he talked about when government tries to take over corporations, it will lose, and the corporations will end up controlling government. And it was a very interesting statement. He said the primary reason for this is that government is a bunch of bureaucrats who live and breathe and die by their donations, by their power, by their ability to, you know, push laws through, whatever the case may be. Whereas corporations and businesses, especially big businesses, you know, they've learned how to compete on the marketplace. And they've, you know, will live and die on their ability to perform and to survive. So they're the more powerful of the two foes. And so when government tries to take over corporations, corporations will win and will take over government. And that's, you know, basically, for lack of a better term, that's fascism. And that's what we have. You know, the left loves to beat up the free enterprise system. Oh, it doesn't work. It's failed. Look at America. And I'm thinking, I haven't seen a free enterprise system in this country for a long time. It's been a corporatist fascism system for a very long time. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it. What you will have always, just never underestimate the lengths that greedy men who desire money and power will go to. And what happens is you end up with a corporatocracy. And so then you get this Hegelian dialectic that with business on one side and government on the other, and somehow government is supposed to regulate business in order to protect the people, but then government becomes tyrannical, so business has to step in to serve the people. And it's really crap, because the fact is we're not talking about business, we're not talking about government. We're talking about criminals in the sphere of government and criminals in the sphere of business, especially in corporations. And they are colluding to screw the people. It's really that simple. None of this can happen without the free money from the Federal Reserve, which is why they always want to set up a central bank. It's also one of the tenets of Marxism. Now, people think, you know, Marxism, when history meets its full course, as if history has some kind of intelligence on its own. History is just the past. It's the human behavior as has already happened. It doesn't tell you much about what's going to happen, because if there's anything I can guarantee you about human beings is they hardly ever look in the rearview mirror, and they hardly ever learn their friggin' lessons. Because Rome was here, Spain was here, France was here, Great Britain was here, and now look, the United States is here. And we haven't learned the lessons. Learn them quickly, because time is running out. But the simple fact is empires fall. And we are currently acting as an empire. It is a corporatist empire with a central bank that's giving all this free money. It is pissing off the rest of the world. And you watch. As soon as the dollar takes a dive, and be assured, that is an inevitability. The only thing we don't know is when. Is it next month? Is it next week? Is it in 5 years? We don't know that, but it is going to happen. And what comes next? That we don't know either. We know what some people want. They want a global fiat scheme. And we know what other people want. We want what the law says, a commodity-backed U.S. Treasury dollar. That's what we want, because that's how we can actually restore stability to our economy. That is a very important thing for you to understand, because it all comes down to money and power. And in our system, power is supposed to be diffused, and money is supposed to be stable, because although that will never be perfect, it is the system that creates the maximum amount of freedom, short of anarchy, which is a way station towards oligarchy and total rule. That's the push and pull that's always happening. And when you're looking for some kind of nostalgic return to America of the 1950s, well, what you think that was is not necessarily what it was. In many ways, it was better than it is now. In many ways, it was worse. I guarantee you, if you're a black person who lived in the South in the 1950s, you didn't think it was so hunky-dory. I guarantee you, if you were a Japanese, an American of Japanese descent, living, you know, say, in California in the 1940s, you didn't think that was too friggin' hunky-dory either. Okay? So don't romanticize your past. We have a lot of blemishes, which we are supposed to learn from, but don't discard the things that we did right. You know, the war for Southern independence was an economic war about liberty and states' rights. Unfortunately, it was tainted with African slavery. But guess what? Most of the African slavery came through New York, which is a northern port. So everybody's tainted with that crap. Okay? The simple fact is you don't liberate a segment of the populace that was enslaved by turning the system of liberty up on it, overturning it so that everybody becomes enslaved. What you do is you liberate the segments of your populace that are enslaved. And we, believe it or not, we probably have more slaves in America today than we did in 1860. Sex trade is at unprecedented levels. Illegal aliens, you know, we talk about, you know, this amnesty bill about giving illegal aliens legal status. Well, guess what? They are some of the most victimized people in the country. Because they're here illegally, so they're afraid to report to the authorities, and there are predators from their own home countries who follow them here to prey upon them because they know that they have no recourse to the police. So we've got massive problems where people are actually being enslaved. And then don't forget, there's also the working poor and wage slavery. Now, don't blame the corporations for that necessarily, because part of that is the destruction of the dollar more so than the greed of those corporations. Because no matter how greedy a corporation is in a truly free market, someone will outbid for those employees and wages will go up. But when you have a devaluing dollar, look, real wages in these United States haven't gone up since 1971. That affects everybody, except the 0.0001% at the top, the Mitt Romneys and the Bill Gates and the George Soroses of the world. So that's the situation you've got. Rand Paul did a great job of pointing out the government is inept at doing certain things, and there are certain things that it should do. Now, strict libertarians would probably have a problem with him calling him a statist because he thinks government should do some things. Statists in both the Republican and Democratic Party will call him an anarchist because he thinks government should only do a few things. That's the tug and pull of liberty versus tyranny. And the only way around that is for you to understand how your Constitution works, to understand that you have responsibility if you want liberty, and to understand that you're being managed. And when I say managed, right, what Chris, this whole, you know, shutdown debacle and the debt and all that stuff that we talked about, I would say it was grossly, grossly mismanaged. But I would not accuse Ted Cruz and Mike Lee of mismanaging it. I would say that it was McConnell and Boehner who mismanaged it. And
Cruz did was a 21-hour filibuster and had the opportunity in that time to hold the floor and hold the cameras on him for 21 hours so he could expose the truth. That's all Cruz did. He didn't send any bills out of the House. He's a senator. You know,
yeah.
The House sent the bill out, and probably in full. The sad part is that the House put out a pretty good bill once they got caught trying to hand the Senate a easy
little,
out.
Little Eric Cantona scam.
Yeah, and then with the Cloutier vote, your squishes, your Republican squishes, essentially voted away their power so the Democrats could, you know, basically do what they want to do. This shutdown was planned a long time ago. They knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Republicans didn't do it, the Democrats did it, you know.
But the Republicans handed it to them.
Yeah, they handed it to them. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know about tactics, you know, and what was going on. All I know is that what Ted Cruz spoke was the truth, and what he did was he did what he told his constituents that voted him into office that he was going to do. He was going to go on there and fight for the rule of law and fight to get rid of Obamacare. And I mean, I think what is amazing to me is at this point in time, with the amount of news that's flying, with all the cancellations, with all the finger pointing, with the crash site, with, you know, with the corruption, with the no bid contracts for this company out of Canada. I mean, it's just amazing to me how, you know, if that would have been a Republican that pushed through a failed bill like this or a failed launch of a department like this, it'd be 24/7. And one of the big things they'd be talking about is why in the hell did they hire a Canadian company when our economy is so bad and a U.S. company could have used the money? I mean, that right there, just little things like that, you know, are
huge. Well, didn't
issues.
Obama point that out? In the debates last year, didn't Obama point out how Mitt Romney, you know, is a job creator in the private market, but he's creating jobs in China by outsourcing? And then Obama goes and does the same thing. And speaking of that insipid douchebag from Massachusetts, they trotted him out. They've trotted him out because they know the 2014 is coming. And the Rhino CLEC, which is a term Pat Caddell coined, the consultant lobbyist establishment complex.
I wish we had a better recording of that Caddell
I know.
Piece.
Somebody,
awesome.
If you have it, please put it on our page. That was from CPAC this year. But in any event, the CLEC is freaking out about the rise of conservatism, the rise of libertarianism, the resurgence of the Tea Party and the takeover of precincts by the Liberty Movement. They're freaked out about this. They're worried. And this is why, see, the one of the tricks in war, you know, Sun Tzu wrote about this over thousands of years ago, is when you are weak, appear strong. And when you are strong, appear weak to confuse your opponent. Well, the CLEC is weak. And they know it, and they're outnumbered, and they know it. So that's why they're trying to appear strong. So what's a great way to appear strong? You bring out the loser who you stole the nomination for last year in order to beat up on people this year. And so here is that douchebag governor who invented Obamacare before it was Obamacare. It was called RomneyCare, and apparently now Obamacare was almost called Rhino Care, and you can call it Rhino Care because it's really around McConnell and Boehner's necks, and it's falling around. And if people can understand that it's Obama's signature piece of legislation and it's failing, and the Republicans can say, "See how we told you we were right," not just rhetorically, but actually put it forward and disengage from the Romney wing of the party, it's the easiest victory to ever have, not only for the politician and for the party in general. But it'll be an easy victory for conservatives and libertarians to actually restore the Constitution. But here's about a minute and a half of Romney talking about the GOP strategy regarding trying to repeal Obamacare, as if the guy that invented Obamacare before Obama would really want it repealed. But just listen to the way he speaks. And he says stuff like, you know, well, first we want to repair, then we want to replace. Then we want to replace, then we want to repair. You don't replace something you're going to repair. You repair it. And if you're going to repair it, you don't need to replace it. But he can't seem to, you know, he's just speaking rhetorically, so it's not coming from his heart, so he can't really get his story straight. But just listen to what they're trying to sell you.
Final point on this. What would you have done? Had you become president, in my interview with you in the course of the campaign, you said there were aspects of Obamacare that you would want to keep, pre-existing conditions, et cetera. What would you have done? You've just watched the Republican Party at the national level try to defund it or delay it. How would you have dealt with Obamacare had you become president?
Well, I'm not president, so I can't be so clear-minded as to tell you what I would have done. But my own plan was to say to each state, you've got a requirement to move to a point where all your people are insured and where you cover pre-existing conditions. We're going to give you flexibility from the federal government level to help you be able to do so. And with regards to what's gone on in Washington lately with the shutdown, if you will, to try and replace and defund Obamacare, look, there's no question but that every Republican that I know of wants to see Obamacare replaced, repealed, and repaired. At the same time, the tactic of shutting down government is one which I thought was not a good tactic in the first place. I thought it would not be effective, and it was not effective. You heard this morning, for instance, the campaign manager of Ken Cuccinelli say that when they were talking about the shutdown, they were having a hard time, but now they're talking about Obamacare, and his campaign is doing better and better. The shutdown was not the right way to go, in my view, but the right way to replace Obamacare is to elect Republicans to the Senate and the House and ultimately the White House and repair Obamacare, replace it, and put in place something that's going to do a better job for the American people and let them keep the insurance they were promised they could keep in the first.
He gave a little nod there to Ken Cuccinelli.
Repair, repeal, which one was he dealing with there?
I don't know. You can't keep him straight because he's lying. So that's besides the point. Just real quick, I just want to point out, he did give a nod to Cuccinelli, and I have to say that Cuccinelli, which is a grassroots conservative constitutionalist running for governor in the Commonwealth of Virginia, got his nomination through convention, not, ad by primary, and so the establishment has not supported him. We're going to get into that in overtime. You've got about 15 minutes live show left, and then we'll go in overtime. We'll discuss that race. But it's really important that he started falling in the polls during the shutdown, not because conservatives wouldn't support him, but because the media was spinning it that it was the Republicans' fault. And now that they caved on that shutdown, which was actually done by Harry Reid, it got even worse because people were like, wow, these Republicans are squishes, and unfortunately when you're carrying the same flag, it tends to spill over onto you when you're pretty much the only one running this year for a big position. But now that Obamacare is coming down around its ears, Ken's rising in the polls because, remember, he's the first attorney general to sue Obama over Obamacare. So, it's interesting how these things play out, and it shows you how if you take the news and you apply some logic to it, you can find the angle for conservatism to get its resurgence because it makes sense and it's true. And that's what the Republicans don't do as a party because they intend to keep losing. They trotted out Romney, Chris. Can you imagine that crap? I mean, he actually later on.
What was the last time we had to hear from him? What was that over?
I don't remember what it was. I don't know. I mean, I really don't like to hear from the guy. I don't like to play him on our show. But I thought it was important to show you the death.
There was something I wanted to say. There was something I wanted to say way back in the beginning of the show that was very important. And it's one of those things where they spend a number, but it's based on a lie. And when they talk about the Republicans are at the lowest they've been, that number, that 20-some percent, existed because they ran Romney. We were tracking all that stuff back in the convention and the primary, and the Republican Party was crashing because they put another, basically a progressive Democrat, shoved him down our throat and forced him through on the convention through some real unsavory means, and the party took a dive at that point in time. It did not take a dive because Ted Cruz took a stand on a bill that's going to destroy our economics.
You're absolutely right.
You'll, Yeah, and that was an important point, and it flashed to my mind when I was listening to the clip, and I forgot to say something about it. I wanted to put that out there. Go ahead.
No, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up. And here's the interesting thing. They took another dive, not because of what Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and Daryl Issa and Trey Gowdy are doing.
They rolled
took
over.
Another dive because McConnell surrendered. Anyway, before we get into the Ken Cuccinelli and all that other good stuff that we want to get into, the Sarvis thing, here's Mitt Romney talking about Chris Christie and the 2016 race. Now, 2016 is a long ways off, so that's not really why this is important. But just notice the names he trots out, because I got to tell you something. If Mitt Romney is for a Republican candidate, rest assured, that's one you want to fire. And if he's against a Republican candidate, that's who you want to hire. Here's Mitt Romney again.
I love this state. It seems right here. Trees are the right height.
I don't know if that was the right clip, but that sounds just as stupid as the last thing he said. But here's
I just had a flashback of the whole primary.
You have told Republicans since losing in 2012 that electability is still the key. That even though other Republicans may have liked some of your challengers, that you were the guy who was best positioned to beat Mitt Romney. To beat President Obama. Do you think that Governor Christie is the odds-on favorite to be the nominee in 2016 because he's the most electable?
Well, I think it's kind of early to say who's the most electable and who would be the most effective candidate. But at this stage, you look at Chris Christie and say, that's a very impressive guy with a great track record, with the demonstrated ability to work across the aisle, with support of labor and blue-collar voters in New Jersey. It's a pretty compelling story. And there's some other very compelling stories. Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio. I mean, there's a long list of very capable people, but Chris Christie stands out as one of the very strongest lights of the Republican Party.
Does Ted Cruz stand out to you as a potential light of the Republican Party?
Look, I'm not going to disqualify anybody, but I think I've indicated some of the names I think are most effective in becoming elected, and we'll see where it goes.
he just couldn't get behind Ted Cruz. I mean, you know, it's amazing. But I found it interesting at the beginning. He says, last year you were the only, Mitt Romney was the only one who could beat Mitt Romney. Well, that's true, because that's who beat Mitt Romney. Obama didn't beat Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney beat Mitt Romney, and that's why Obama's still president. It's so friggin' ridiculous. When they trot these guys out, you got to wonder, what are they thinking, Chris? I mean, are people really buying this crap that this guy is someone to listen to for who's electable?
I'm sorry, man. I'm losing it. Oh my God! I feel like I'm in one of them weird comedy sci-fi shows when we talk about this stuff. I mean, it's just, are you serious? You know, it was like when they brought out George Bush. You know, when the NSA got exposed, and Clapper lied to Congress, and by the way, he still has his job. After he lied to Congress, and they blew the dust off of Bush, you know? I mean, they beat Bush up for years. They're still blaming Bush for stuff. And they blew the dust off of Bush and brought him out to defend the NSA spying on every American. Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? Anyway,
you know, if I wasn't living here, Chris, I would be laughing. If I wasn't living here, I'd be laughing. But the thing is, this is our reality.
Well,
and that's the crazy thing.
I follow a lot of international news, and trust me, they are laughing at us.
Yeah. I don't know if they're laughing
crying,
at us. They're laughing.
And crying.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're going to take them with us. When we go down, they're coming
yeah.
down with us, whether they like it or not. And speaking
of
reality,
we keep exporting our inflation.
Yeah, well, at some point that will come back. But before we get into inflation, all that stuff, because I think it's important,
God.
We've got a little bit from Peter Schiff coming up about that, because it is an important
Amen.
Topic. And keep in mind, right now they're in the midst of these so-called budget negotiations where the Democrats want to raise, take off the sequester limits. Which, I mean, the sequester was just basically a reduction in the increase, and the Democrats, that's not even good enough for them. They need to spend more money that we don't have, and the Republicans don't want to raise taxes. Well, I'm all for getting rid of the income tax, but the reality of it is if you can get cuts out of the Democrats and you give them some tax hikes on certain groups, we're in dire situation right now. If we don't get this budget balanced within the next 5 years, we're going down. This empire is over, and it's going to be the worst thing you've ever experienced in your life, and you're going to sit around and say, oh, man, you know, I remember back when we used to have food that didn't have mold on it, and we could actually get gasoline. It's going to be like Mad Max out there, where you're going to be, you know, hunting around and trying to kill people to get some gasoline so you can run your car or heat your house. And you're going to be saying, oh, you know what, it's almost like those conservatives and libertarians turned out to be right. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Just like with this Obamacare mess where you were like, oh, no, this thing is good and it's great and it's going to provide all the people with pre-existing conditions who can't get insurance now will be insured and it'll be, you know, unicorns and sunshine everywhere, and now it's coming off its wheels and we're sitting there going, like, we tried this for 3.5 years. We've been telling you that was going to happen, and now it's happening. Why don't you start listening to us? Ron Paul's been saying this stuff for 40 years. Start listening, for God's sake, and electing people who understand these things. If you don't, the show is over. You know?
Well,
good. Well, I'm just going to remind everybody that we've only got 5 minutes live radio left.
What do you think?
So if you are listening live, and there's a bunch of you who are right now, if you want to continue to listen live, you can only listen on your phone and not your browser in your phone, your actual telephone line, because Broth Talk Radio will cut you off at midnight Eastern. So you got 5 minutes to call in to continue listening, 646-649-1013.
And we won't
or
suck
catch
you
the
into
archives.
We won't suck you into the show. You can just call in and hang on the phone, and Rex won't, you know, bring you into the show. So
yeah, I won't beat you up unless you want me to. But yeah, you won't have to be on the air. You can just listen to your phone. We don't really have enough time to bring you on the air because we've got a few things we want to get to and try to wrap this thing up within the next 30 minutes.
Well,
if you can't listen live, check us out on the Tex and Rex show page. You can just listen to the archives anytime. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just thinking, you know, we stayed on Obamacare longer than we were going to, but it is important. But it is just a small part of the bigger issues of the country. You know, if you do not have economic freedom and stability, you will never have a future. There's no future in oppression, in poverty, in government control, in socialism and communism and Marxism and ism, is, you know, whatever ism you want to choose. These people are absolutely insane. What they have some crazy vision of where they want to take America, and it has a whole lot to do with what most people don't want to happen. And that's an important conversation, but I know we're going to roll into Peter Schiff, who is one of the guys who predicted this last crash. He is an Austrian Economics Foundation guy. A lot of people don't understand this stuff, and I know, and we spin through it really fast. But our economic system is all fiat-based systems fail in time. And the only reason that ours has lasted as long as it has, especially when Nixon took us off the gold standard and just opened the floodgates, and anybody who's ever looked at charts of debt and inflation from that point forward, it's almost shocking. And I don't know why people don't – it doesn't bother people more, but when you look at it, you know, I remember – and I've said this before, but I remember when I was a child in the 60s, grade school, that my dad was a professor and he made $55,800 a year. Went to college, had a family of five, a two-story home, cars, boat, trailer, took the summers off, all on $1,500 a year. And my mom was very educated, but she didn't work much when we were kids. And we survived. You know, we weren't rich, but we did pretty good. You know, their second house was $17,000, and that was a, you know, probably a 2,800 square foot home on a mountain that had a view. We could see Mount Shasta one way and the Three Sisters up in Central Oregon out of our picture windows, and that was on $5,800 a year. So it's important for people. I don't think people understand this. They hear inflation, but they don't understand what causes it and why it happens. Inflation is a tax that is put on you, and we just accept it. Whereas if the government, every time the government tries to raise taxes, you know, there's a big war and the people revolt. Well, inflation is a way of taxing people, printing money, borrowing money, government overspending money, overspending its budget, printing more money, borrowing more money, and then inflation increases. You know, your cost of living goes up 20%, and you think you're making more money, but you're not really making more money. You said it very well. We haven't had real wage increases since the 70s. And yeah. I look at how hard people work. You know, I mean, I remember when $100,000 invested would pay you enough money that you could actually live off of it. Do you remember that era? I mean, I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but I remember when $100,000 was a lot of money. I remember living in Alaska in the 80s, and I used to come out of Alaska because we had a whole different economy up there, much more expensive. And I would come down south, and if I had a $100 bill in my wallet, people couldn't give me change for it. I remember this stuff. You know, I have enough life under my belt now and enough gray hair, you know, to remember this. And yet people don't understand what that means. And until people understand this, they're always going to be victims of a corrupt government system. And I'm not anti-government. You know, I'm not some crazy, you know, anarchist, you know, that you know, thinks government's bad. Government has a very important role, and it has very specific roles, like defending our border would be one of them. But, you know, things that they're supposed to be doing. And then my state has a whole series of things that they're responsible for. It is not the federal government's responsibility to come into my life and tell me what kind of clothes I can buy, what kind of toilet I have to have, you know, what I can do on my property. That's between me and my community, my county and my state. And this is the battle that's going on in this country right now. And if you do not have economic freedom and control and your ability to make money, make decisions for your family, there excuse me,
the Federal Reserve got to him. Quick. Get him some more Obamacare.
I don't even smoke. But maybe that's why I start drinking and smoking. But this is what people need to learn. And I think you're going to – I don't know if you're ready to roll into shift, but I just wanted to throw that out there because I think it's important. I think that people don't understand it, and it's probably one of the most important things that people need to learn. And Ron Paul – you know, people can say all kinds of things about Ron Paul's positions and his, you know, his foreign policy and whatever, whatever. But I'll tell you what, he had the money thing figured out, and he still does. And he was right, and he was right legally and constitutionally. And that's the important thing. It's amazing how far we've gotten away from constitutional arguments or conversations. And that's what turn around. Otherwise, kiss it goodbye. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, actually, you gave us a really good segue. We'll go right into the shift thing on Kudlow, but just wanted to point out that what Chris just said is vital. You have to have a basic understanding of basic economics. So just read Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson. That is a very good starting point. I would also recommend Dr. Ron Paul's book, End the Fed. I think that he's got the book out now about the new Ron Paul curriculum, so you could probably find End the Fed on Amazon or somewhere else fairly inexpensive. And you can actually get Economics in One Lesson free at Mises.org. That's Mises.org. That's the Ludwig von Mises Institute. You can just search for Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson.
Oh, that's incredible. And they're an incredible resource all the way around.
Oh, yeah.
You can build your whole future economic foundation off of what's off that site.
And it doesn't cost you a thing. Now, if you've got some scratch, I would strongly recommend you support them, but it doesn't cost you anything to get this information. And if you merely understand the broken window fallacy in Hazlitt's book, you're more educated than 99% of people who call themselves professional economists. So get to understand this basic stuff, because economic freedom is not necessarily about making a profit. It's not even necessarily about money. It is about you having a right to to your own property, and that property might be the place you live, might be the shirt on your back, it might be the apple you're eating. Whatever it is, it's yours. It could be your insurance policy. It's supposed to be yours, and you need to have some basic economic understanding. But as far as what Chris said about the money, yeah. I mean, used to be if you had banked $1 million, you were a millionaire. Today, if your income is $1 million a year, you might be a millionaire. The fact is that pretty soon we're all going to be billionaires. The problem is it'll cost you $10,000 to buy a loaf of bread. So more money is not something to look forward to. More money is the problem, because money and wealth are not the same thing in a fiat scheme. Money is the ruler by which you measure your wealth, and unfortunately the assholes that are in charge of issuing the rulers keep adding more and more inches to your ruler without making your ruler any bigger. So you got 12 inches of wood and you got a 12-inch ruler. They're matching, right? Then they give you a 24-inch ruler and you still got the same 12 inches of wood. Now each inch is worth half as much. That's how they create new money and reduce the value of existing wealth. And and what he said about it being a tax. Well, actually, inflation attacks. Inflation attacks your wealth, siphons it away from you, the poor and the middle class, and hands it over to the wealthy. When I say wealthy, I'm not talking about people that make $250,000 a year or people that have a $1.2 million home. I'm talking about Mitt Romney-type wealthy. That's who's stealing from you. Raytheon, Boeing, the insurance exchanges, quote environmental lobby, Planned Parenthood. These are the entities that are getting full dollars from the government while you're being ripped off and your cost of goods is increasing at a clip in excess of 10%. Now, I'm getting a 1.5% increase in my Social Security, so clearly that CPI number is, you know, somewhere around 1.5%. It might be. But that's the CPI measure they're using today. If you use the CPI measure that they used in the 1990s, you know, last time we had four balanced budgets that everybody likes to give Bill Clinton credit for, but they actually belong to Speaker Newt Gingrich. That's who they belong to, because revenue bills originate in the House, right? If you use the CPI measure from 1990, inflation is somewhere around 6%. If you use the one they used in the 80s, it's almost 10%. And if you factor in the crap that Bernanke's been printing at the tune of 85 billion a month, that's $1 trillion a year, inflation is closer to 15%. Now, you haven't seen some of the prices rise because of supply and demand, and also because we've been exporting boatloads of this inflation. But here is Peter Schiff and a couple other guys on the Kudlow Report, and it's not the whole clip, but it's a good clip to listen to. Like I said, all of the clips that we play, all of the articles we reference, all of the information we talk about is available on the Tex and Rex Show page on Facebook, so just go there. If you're looking at one of our Facebook pictures, just click on the picture in the comments section. They're all listed there. These are good resources. They give you information you need to know in order to mount the battle for conservatism and libertarianism over and against rhinoism and democratic socialism. Because if we don't restore this republic and we keep acting as a global hegemonic empire abroad and a police state at home, we're going to end. It ain't going to be pretty. But victory is at hand if you can grow the force, if you can get more people involved. So get busy. This clip's about 5 minutes. We'll come back on the other side and probably go to final thoughts. I wanted to get to some other stuff, but we'll have to save it for next week. And remember, our regular broadcast times, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Rex and Trog will be here to inform you about what you as grassroots can do to restore the republic. Here is Kudlow with Peter Schiff.
Peter Schiff joins us, CEO of Euro-Pacific Capital. You know, I understand that they removed some things from the statement today, but I just have a totally different – I'm going to you, Peter. I read the New York Times Sunday with this big story about the Fed seeking to raise inflation. And I believe under Janet Yellen, just continuing Ben Bernanke, I call her the Empress of Dubs, that they would like to see an inflation rate of somewhere around 3 to 5%, like guys like Paul Krugman have been advocating for years. Now, they're poured a lot of money in. So far, it hasn't happened. But I think that's the Fed policy.
Well, that is the policy. And you can imagine how bad inflation would actually be if the official numbers were 4 or 5%, because I think it's already higher than that. And the main reason that it's not even higher is because we've been able to export that inflation abroad. But you go back to this Fed statement. The Fed doesn't mention taper. It says adjust monetary policy. Adjustment doesn't imply a direction. I think what the Fed is getting ready to do is increase the amount of QE, not diminish it.
See, Andy Bush, the consumer price index actually is slowing down. I mean, what was it today? Year on year, 1.2%, something like that. It's an odd thing that all the reserves the Fed has printed has not yet been converted into the money supply, hence causing inflation. But I think they're going to hang in there. That's why I think they're going to keep buying bonds and keep hoping that somehow the inflation rate goes up. I think that's the policy. I don't care what the FOMC statement said today. They want a 3% or higher inflation rate.
That's right. It's something that certainly would make Chicago Fed President Charlie Evans very happy, because he's advocated that. But the Fed is like a rabid dog chasing its tail. If it lets the market know it wants to taper, then rates go up, and then lo and behold, financial conditions grow tighter. And they mentioned that in September. But then as the market, you know, reacted to them not tapering, financial conditions eased. And in this statement, they get rid of that statement about financial conditions tightening. It's a bad cycle that the Fed's in. They're going to get trapped in this. I don't see a clear way out. They have to keep their balance sheet. They won't ever. I'm not sure what they can
no
do
way
at
out.
This point.
They have no way out. They have,
yeah,
they have
really
no game. They
no
have no exit strategy. They have no
right.
game plan. It's just as bad as the budget and tax committees in Congress. They have no exit strategy and no way out. But I was going to say this. Look, I call her Janet Yellen with all respect. She's very smart, okay? She is the
right.
Empress of Dubs, okay? That's what
yep.
she is.
Based on
inflation,
November.
Inflationism is the new goal at the Fed.
First of all, we have nothing on which we should base calling her the Queen of Dubs.
Not Empress.
We have nothing to base it on. We have nothing to base it on.
Why?
But that said, let's step away from Paul Krugman for a second and bring up Ken Rogoff.
Right.
Who won 6% inflation.
Now, don't those voices mean something to you when you hear those quoted in a New York Times story?
These are forget the New York Times story. Ken Rogoff has been saying this since day one. Mm-hmm. And I give him all the credit. He's someone I share a lot of views with. I should be associated with him. It would be great for me. But that said, there is something to be said in the literature for a burst of inflation or a moderately higher level of inflation than we've been experiencing. And inherent in this entire discussion or underlying this entire discussion is exactly what you brought up, which is that the CPI on a year-over-year basis is
falling.
Running less than the
coming
Fed's
down.
Target.
Right.
So,
coming down.
So we can scream all we want about what the Fed's doing and it's printing and it's printing and it's printing based on the way that the government measures inflation, which, of course, is an important caveat.
Peter,
you're not getting it.
This story bothers me. It doesn't even have the patina of any control, let's say, over the value of the dollar, what I call king dollar.
That's the Treasury.
It doesn't have any. The Fed is a major. Yes, it is the Treasury, but the Fed is an important driver. And anyway, since when does higher inflation promote better economic growth? Since when does higher inflation help the economy?
It doesn't. It retards it. I mean, this is a ruse. They don't want more inflation to help the economy. It's not going to help the economy. What they want to do is sustain asset bubbles. They want to sustain government spending. They want to keep on monetizing debt. They're looking for an excuse why they're not going to taper QE, because they can't.
You think the Federal Reserve wants to create asset bubbles?
But that's all they've got. That's this whole phony economy is all they've got.